Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
All right. Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. My name is Brandon. I'm here with my good friend, Matt. Some of you know him as Rusty the Reseller. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm good. Here with Moondog.
that's my radio name. I told Matt. But Moondog. Oh, it's old Moondog 24.
Oh, that's right.
That's great. I love that shirt, by the way. I don't collect a lot of things, but I do collect t-shirts. So
do you?
I have probably 400 or 500 different t-shirts that I've printed.
Oh my goodness. Listen, every time we do one of these episodes, and it is we say it every time and we're not lying, not like we're saying it over and over again to try to lie to you, but we don't talk about what we're going to talk about on these beforehand. But what I wanted to say is that I feel like every time that we get on here, I learn another thing that you're interested in or that you collect. And so listen, outside of these, we need to have a conversation about the stuff you're, because I come across different things all the time, so I might pass on something or see something that you would really want.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm it's funny you say that. I'm like, oh, I'm not a collector, but I actually probably am more of a collector than I want to admit. But I don't collect the way other people do. The reason I collect t-shirts is probably the same reason that people collect anything, is that I love the conversation starter. So right now I'm wearing a Hendersonville Honeycrisp minor league baseball team t-shirt that my nephew plays for. Whenever I see a shirt that is from, like, you're wearing a Run Bull City, I don't know what that means, t-shirt.
Bull City is Durham, North
Carolina, right? Durham.
So it's like this is what's great. My wife, she's never really given me a hard time for it, but I've seen her eyes. This is like for, I don't know, like a marathon or a 5K, one I didn't run in. But it's like I walk around like I'm sporting, like, hey, look at me, I'm a runner.
So
and
awesome.
This is not me.
Yeah, there's only a few things that I will not wear. I will not wear the t-shirt of another team that I do not root for, rarely.
Okay.
Because people go, oh, hey, I'm a big Laker fan. I'm like, I am not a Laker fan. Or I will never, ever, ever, ever wear a Yale or Harvard shirt. You see people wearing and you're going to go, did you go to Yale? Well, mm-hmm. No, I didn't go to Yale. But like, then why? I don't. So anyway, but other than that, everything is.
Sure.
Like if people, you know, it's funny. People often will find a crazy t-shirt that they love. They'll send to me. Like I love collecting diner t-shirts and it's just fun. Ooh. I just love it because it's like a conversation starter. But anyway, enough about that, Matt.
One last thing.
Okay.
So I long before I was buying and selling and doing things, I used to go to thrift stores like in college and high school, and I would get t-shirts and crazy hats and stuff like that. Was kind of a thing I did. I don't have a lot of those left over anymore, but I'm going to share two things I've got. And so then the question back to you will be, what are your favorites? Because you say you have a lot of t-shirts. I've got two t-shirts that are currently my favorites that are old. One is an original Spice Girls t-shirt, and it still has the tag on it, like
nice.
The hang tag, okay? And then I have, this is probably my favorite, it's a Kenny Rogers tour t-shirt from 83, and it's just his face and his, you know, his chest on it. And you know what? I'm going to wear it. I'm going to wear it on one of the next podcasts.
Oh, good. Please do. Wear the Spice Girls shirt, too.
I will. The next two are going to be those two shirts. So, okay, what are your favorite? You have favorite t-shirts?
Well, I don't really have a favorite t-shirt. I honestly, because I kid you not, I probably have in the neighborhood of 500 to 600. I have a closet. My wife always makes fun of me. I have one closet in our house for my t-shirts. I hang them on hangers. I have the velvet hangers so they hang. I love going and finding an old, I'm like, oh, I remember that shirt. I have one that's the Santa Rosa Prune Pickers. That's probably my all-time favorite. That was a minor league baseball team back in the 30s.
Cool.
But it's funny, it, sort of segueing back into what we're here for, talking about reselling, I was thinking about, you just said about a thrift store t-shirt. I would bet you dimes to dollars that if I took all my t-shirts to a thrift store, they would probably pay me $50 for them, and they would probably make in the neighborhood of $5,000 minimum, because they would put $10 for each one, you know. So like, I'm only saying that if you find a really cool shirt, thrift stores love those things. So anyway, that's a whole nother show we could talk about.
Not only do they love them, I kind of wish we were doing a show. Maybe we need to just like do a turnaround here and do a t-shirt show, but because like definitely people are buying old band shirts and things like are huge. But I've been to your house, so I know it's not like this, but as you're describing it for those, I'm getting a mental picture of like, you're kind of like a hoarder. It's just piles of shirts. And so like when you come to the door, sort of rolling and tumbling, like Scrooge McDuck diving into coins. It's like you swimming around in piles of t-shirts.
Yeah, no, I wish. No, I have one little closet dedicated to that. I told you I collect three things.
Yeah, yeah.
I collect diner mugs, t-shirts, and I collect those commemorative quarters for my daughter. Like I did, we did the States together, the national parks, and now we're doing the women's rights leaders or
is this like a
women.
Franklin Mint situation or
no, it's their actual quarters. You'll see them in distribution, but that's another thing that we got to do a show on coins because that's a whole, I'm not a collector of like fancy coins. I only do that because I want to put them up on my daughter's wall so that when she's looking at the States or learning about them, for me, it's more about just that I think it's kind of cool that the Mint does that. But anyway,
we will definitely do one in coins. I got some recently, so we can talk about it. But today I'm going to give a quick update on some of the jewelry stuff. We're going back to pocket watches and stuff. I want to tell you how that ended up so that in case people have been following it. And then we are going to talk a little bit about jewelry today, but a little bit different than what you might think. So and a few episodes ago, I purchased on Facebook Marketplace, Sight Unseen, six pocket watches and some chains, chains. I paid $500 for them. One of the pocket watches turned out to be solid 10 karat gold. One of the chains ended up being solid 10 karat gold. All of them has sold now. So I sold five of the six for $500. So five of the six I've sold and made my money back on it. So now we're at even. The pocket watch that was made of gold sold for $1,500 and the chain sold for $1,200. So I made $2,700 in profit off of that purchase, and it took me about 2 weeks.
Wow. That's a good week. A good 2 weeks.
That was a good, that was part of the good sales I've had in the last few days.
So yeah, you were talking about this on our last show about you had a really good run in the last couple weeks. So anyway, what are we talking about today?
So today I wanted to, we're going to talk about jewelry with regard to what I do to test things and to inspect them to know what you have. So I'm going to show you a couple of pieces that I acquired last week. I'm going to tell you what I did to test them and we'll kind of go from there. So these haven't sold yet. I just listed them yesterday because I just now know what they are. But I bought at an estate sale last week. I bought several trays of quote unquote costume jewelry. I paid $205 for everything. Now, there's probably in the range of 300 to 400 pieces in this. So I was in less than a dollar a piece for these. I sorted through all of them. There was a handful of sterling silver stuff. But the two pieces I want to talk about, and I'm going to hold them up. You know, we have a website where you can see pictures of this. What I'm showing you is a fairly small pin, like or a brooch. You would pin it on your shirt or your scarf or something. And it is gold in color, kind of like a coppery gold color. It looks like the stem and like almost like a flower at the top.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks very flower-like.
Yep, there are these stones that are quite clear. And I pulled it out for a couple reasons. When you're looking at jewelry, you turn it over on the back and you get almost all of your information from the back of the piece of jewelry. How it's constructed, what materials it's made out of, the way that it looks. This particular piece is a pin, of course, so it has this long pin that you would stick through the shirt. But the little catch, the part that it hooks into, just looks like a small C. It's like a little hook. Mm-hmm. And that is the way that brooches were constructed and made back in the 1800s, early 1900s, because other styles, like the catch where it swivels around and holds it in place, weren't invented yet. So when you see one like this, it doesn't mean 100% of the time it's that way, but a lot of the times, especially if the piece looks old, that's sort of a marker that it's an older piece.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that these stones on the back are held into place with prongs, and they are open back, meaning a light is allowed to pass through. That's important because with genuine stones and or glass anywhere up to diamonds, stones that are nicer and have their own hue and saturation naturally, you want light to pass through it because that's how you see the color. For fake stones, plastic, rhinestones, they will either be glued into place, they'll have fittings that are superficial, you can pry off really easily, or they'll have some sort of this part, like a foil, sort of like painted on or attached to the back of it, which is like a, it's almost like a mirror would be made. It's a, it's something behind the stone to reflect light back at you and give you a different color. So I noticed, okay, it has an old, it looks old, it has an old catch on the back, it has stones that are see-through. All of this is saying higher end costume jewelry at the very least, if not fine jewelry. So I put it aside.
And that came in that big, that greater lot of jewelry
it
you got.
It came in this lot. Yep. Okay. I pulled it out. It doesn't look just at first glance all that different than other costume jewelry. So you really have to do some inspection. All that to say, I tested it, and we'll talk about testing in a moment. It turned out to be 18 karat solid gold.
Oh.
And it's not marked. A lot of times people don't know unless they test something if it's made of gold, especially if it's not marked. However, not all jewelry made of silver or gold or precious metals are marked. Prior to the times when governments put into place purity standards requiring manufacturers to put stamps on there, they can be made of precious metals but won't have a stamp because that was not a requirement. So this is a good example of that. This is considered to be a Georgian-style jewelry, and that style was from like the late 1700s to about 1830. So I'm not saying that this is definitely as old as the early 1800s, but it quite possibly could be. So now that I know it's a precious metal, I'm like, okay, what are these stones? Because they don't put plastic in 18 karat gold. They don't put glass in 18 karat gold, usually. I had these tested. They are not diamonds. I could test that myself. I knew they weren't diamonds. So what are they? Well, I took it to a jewelry shop in Asheville, which is near where I live. I'm in Western North Carolina. And it turns out that these are clear spinel. Spinel is just a gemstone. They can come in various colors. This happens to be a clear variety. I can also tell because I've handled thousands of pieces of jewelry. When you look at it with a loop, it's sort of an odd size. This was created, these stones were cut back before the use of lasers, and it's pretty heavily included. That also told me that this is not glass. It's not cubic zirconia. They don't make synthetic stones with heavy inclusions typically. So if they're going to make it, they want to make it as nice.
What is an inclusion, Matt? What do you mean by that?
An inclusion is just some mineral, or it could be a fracture inside of it, but oftentimes it's grit, pieces of dirt, pieces of rock or things as it formed around. It's not perfectly translucent. Diamonds are the same way. You know, there's ratings of diamonds for color and clarity and all of that. So when a person says, oh, this diamond, you know, it's okay, it's a little cloudy, it's heavily included, what they mean is that there's debris or things that you can see with your eye when you look at it up close with a loop. So this was a really cool piece. This piece, I haven't sold it yet, but if I wait long enough, I guarantee you I'll sell it somewhere between $600 and $800, possibly more than that. Again, I paid $205 for all the costume jewelry, and I still have all of that to sell. So before I get to the next part, I want to say that the reason I know this is 18 karat gold is because I have the ability to test for metals myself. It's not hard and it's not expensive. I'm not going to show it on the screen, but there will be a photograph that you can see on our website of a basic testing kit. It can test for gold, it can test for silver and platinum. They cost $20 or less. You can buy them on Amazon, eBay, things like that. It involves a little plate, a little black plate, maybe 5 inches long by 3 inches deep. And it's just, you can scrape the piece of jewelry on it till you get a mark. And then you take these little vials of, it's essentially acid at different strengths, and you start with the lowest one, you drop it on there. If it goes away, if it disappears, then it means it's a lower purity or it's not gold. If that streak stays, then you know, if you start with 10 karat gold acid, for example, if it stays there, it doesn't eat it, then you know it's at least 10 karat gold because the acid didn't eat it. Then you move up to 14 karat acid. And if it eats it, then you know it's 10 karat gold. If it doesn't eat it, it's at least 14 karat, and so on. You can go up to 18, 22, that sort of thing. So, you have any Georgian brooches, 18 karat gold brooches at the house?
I was literally thinking to myself about, like, how... Okay. So I'm just, I put my, like, this rando, don't know anything about this stuff hat on. I walk into this thing. I was just thinking, here's this bin of stuff that you found. And as I'm a history teacher by training. I was a history teacher for years and years. And I was thinking to myself, wow, who knows how many hands this piece of jewelry has gone through?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
It, you know, so it was originally bought. Obviously, if it's from the 1700s, it was handmade by a jeweler somewhere in a style, right? There were no factories of jewelry factories at that time. So let's just assume it was from the early 1800s. It's not mass produced. It's made, each one of these is an individual thing made by a jeweler. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, that's amazing. Just forget about the cost. Forget about everything else. Just the thought that this piece of jewelry is sitting in a box at a, where'd you say you bought it at again?
I bought it at an estate sale, like here in Western North Carolina.
In an estate sale. So who knows? I mean, how many hands that went through? I love that. To me, it's almost like you're sort of keeping history alive by doing that. I just find
it
fascinating.
It's multiple. I mean, let's just hypothetically say this thing was made in 1830. It's passed through multiple generations of hands.
Yes.
Possibly in the same family, possibly not, possibly sold. This, I believe, was made in Europe. So I don't think it's an American. So it went across, halfway across the world to end up here in a little cardboard tray with like 20 other pieces of costume jewelry. That's where it landed. And then it happened to be found by someone who knows what it is.
Right.
But maybe wouldn't have. It could have just gone to somebody else. So that stuff is out there.
And it's not costume jewelry.
It isn't. Oh, it's not.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy that people don't know. You put this thing out, oh, it's whatever, cheap costume jewelry, and in it is a 200-year-old piece of Georgian jewelry. I just find that crazy.
And I can't tell you, I can't stress how often that this happens to me. And I'm not traveling the country. I'm just mainly staying in my area. This happens. This is happening everywhere. There's stuff out there that you have at home that you don't understand what it is. It could be incredibly valuable. There's stuff that's being put out at your local thrift store that it's not marked. They don't know what it is. They don't know how to inspect it. I mean, I work with thrift stores sometimes selling things on their behalf because I know how to evaluate it and I can sell it online faster and for more money than they can, right? And so you need to learn how to inspect these things because there is stuff that may be passing through around you all the time that you wouldn't necessarily know. So I'm going to give you another example of something. These are the two nicest pieces that came from this lot, the same lot that I paid $205 for. What I'm holding up now is a necklace, and it's a gold necklace. If you know what a charm bracelet looks like, mm-hmm. it goes around your wrist and it has these little things that hang off. That's kind of how this is set up. It's got these little, almost like miniature pendants kind of staggered on it. In between the little pendants are these little etched pieces of metal, but then the pendants themselves have little facet-cut stones that are a pinkish-purple color, and then they also have what would be considered a halo, so it goes around the main stone. They are seed pearls, and these seed pearls have holes drilled through them, and they've been constructed with a piece of wire. So they, like instead of string, they used wire, and they put it around. When I initially looked at it, I could tell by the way it was constructed that it was old. It was not costume jewelry. So I put it aside. I looked at it. I looked at the clasp with a loop, and it says that it's a gold-filled clasp. Okay. So I think, great, gold-filled. I put it in the gold-filled pile. I pull it back out later, and I look at it a little bit more, and I think, you know what? This chain is much more of a yellow-gold color than the clasp. The clasp is kind of more of a copper color. Definitely age-appropriate clasp. It's like a round spring clasp. But I thought, you know what? I wonder if this is a replacement clasp, if this was not a part of the original necklace, because it's strange that you'd have two different colored metals on this. So I test the one of the pendants, and it tests for 14 karat gold. So I take it in to the same jewelry shop that I tested the other piece, and they confirmed it's 14 karat gold with a gold-filled clasp. So the clasp at one point broke, and somebody replaced it with a non-solid gold clasp. So now we're getting into a deep area where the average person, A, wouldn't think to test it separately. They wouldn't even maybe necessarily know that that clasp would be marked in the first place. But the point is, this ends up being a very old piece of jewelry, and the stones are something called grape garnets. So a garnet is a stone that's kind of a deep maroon, almost like a wine colored. These kind of almost had me fooled because they were a little bit of more of a pinkish color. But that, the size, number, and really quality of these stones is pretty exceptional, pretty rare. And it's it was a piece that the jeweler said he'd never seen something like it before. I don't have, there's not a single one like this for sale on eBay. I wouldn't be surprised at all if I could get somewhere in the range of $1,000 to $1,200 for it.
Wow.
So again, we're looking at these two pieces of jewelry, I'm confident will combine, will sell for about $2,000 from a $205 costume jewelry lot, of which not only will I make my money back, but I'll already get into profit with just the costume pieces themselves, which I'm not showing you. But I also had to test these stones, and going along with the gold or metal testing kit, I think that anybody who wants to buy jewelry or is interested should consider getting that kit, a kit that you can test the metal, but also a couple of other devices which can test for what a stone, a gemstone is. And I'm going to hold up one right here. This is a cheaper version. They're not that expensive. It says a diamond selector. And basically, it's got a little tip on the end of it. You turn it on, and you just depress that lightly on the stone, and it will give you a reading. Now, these numbers that are on here, it has a scale from 1 all the way up to 8 or above. And that is for the hardness of the stone. There's something called the, I don't know how exactly how it's pronounced, the Mohs or the Mohs scale, M-O-H-S. But it's a hardness scale for substances. It goes all the way from 1 or from 10, which is a diamond. It's the hardest substance on Earth, all the way down to a 1, which is like talc or something, mm-hmm. you know, that's a powder. And then everything in between. And every single gemstone that's out there has an assigned hardness. There are a few random ones out there that have a couple different hardnesses based on the way that they form. Like kyanite, for example, has two different hardnesses depending on the direction. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, if you test something and it tests a 10, it's going to be a diamond or possibly a moissanite, and that's good. If it's a 9, we're talking about corundum. Corundum is the term for sapphires and rubies, which are the same substance. Rubies are just pink or red sapphires, and sapphires can be in any color, white, brown, black, all the way up to beautiful translucent colors. So you should have one of these because you might get a piece of costume jewelry. This brooch that I showed earlier ended up not having diamonds, but it very well could have, and mm-hmm. I wouldn't have known if I had not had a way to test it. So I think you should get this. I also have something called...
How much does that cost, Matt?
This, I don't remember. It couldn't have been more than $30, probably 20-some.
I'll look up the link and put it in the
Please do.
Episode so that people can look at it.
Do it, and I have another one called a Presidium Tester, and that's that would cost about $200, so you know, you're getting into a little bit more money here, but... To me, it's absolutely worth it because I was able to tell that these are garnet stones even by testing them myself. When I will usually test myself, but then I want confirmation independently. So I'll go to a jewelry store or a place and let somebody put it in a machine because they can tell like the elemental substances mm-hmm. that they have. So I highly recommend you do that. You test things if you're curious, if you're not so sure, because you know it could be the difference of quite literally thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and it's funny you were saying that. I'm running the math in my head again. It's like, yeah, purchasing things like that, you're like, do I really want to spend $200 on a thing? But if you think about the fact that you bought this box of jewelry, one sale from that box of jewelry that you tested, that you found out was what it was, like knowledge is power. So if you test it, you find out what it is that, would you say to yourself, oh, wow, that was worth $200? Yes. So there are certain
100%.
Things that are going to be... necessities of the business that you just have to have. Like if you're a carpenter, you got to have a hammer. So
yep, you need to have your tools.
Yep.
These are the tools of the jewelry buying, reselling, or even if you inherit something, don't just go down to the pawn shop because they'll say, oh, it's 14 karat gold. They'll weigh it. And then they're going to offer you something well under the spot value of the metal. And they give you nothing for the stones. A lot of the reselling jewelry trade, they remove the stones and they pitch them. Even if they're diamonds, sometimes they sell them, but they don't get much. Anything that's a carat or under in a diamond almost is worthless once it goes through the secondary market. They take the stones out, they sell it off to a metal refinery, they refine the metal, and then they sell it back to the jewelry industry to remake new jewelry with it. It's a cycle.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, pawn shops, places like that oftentimes won't even buy your piece of jewelry unless it has a larger than a carat stone in it. So, that's also good for knowing like what types of jewelry you might want to buy for somebody that's going to retain value versus losing value, like buying a brand new car and driving off the lot and it's already worth $5,000
right.
less because
right.
of that. So,
in the last, because we're almost out of time, but really quickly, you've mentioned several times that you've gone to these jewelers. As a reseller, have you developed a relationship with them to get a special price, or is it just people are going to have to pay? I mean, I'm thinking, I'm again running like, how much do I want to pay when I go to a jeweler to get this tested?
That's a great question. Never once have I paid to have something tested.
Oh.
I do have some relationships, like some people that buy gold and stuff. I can usually sell it for more online, so I don't typically do that. But what I do is I go to, there's a pawn shop locally that has a jewelry store connected to it. They employ a gemologist, and they fabricate, repair, they do evaluations and appraisals on jewelry, so they know what they're talking about.
Mm.
When you go in there, you come in with jewelry and say, hey, I'm interested in seeing what this is. I might be interested in selling it.
Okay.
They go back, they test it, they tell you, because they want to buy if it's worth something and if you're willing to pay them. So in this case, I took both of these pieces I showed you today that I'm telling you I'll be able to sell for $2,000. They offered me $414 for the two of them. And they even told me, yeah, this one we're going to scrap. This one we're going to repair. The necklace we're going to repair and sell. You know how they were going to repair it? They were going to take the gold-filled clasp off and put a 14-karat gold clasp on it so that it's 100% solid gold. So I left there armed with new information, verifying things I already believed. I came back to eBay. I searched for an era-specific spring clasp, and it says 585 on it, which is the European hallmark for 14-karat gold, because I believe this is a European-created piece. And I'm going to do that repair myself, and I'm going to sell it, because it's not hard to just stick a couple rings on the end of a chain. So the point is, you can do this in your area. This stuff is out there, but just have the correct tools and test stuff yourself, or go to a place, let them test it to tell you what it is. Sometimes I sell, sometimes I don't. I have a variety of places I go, so I'm not showing up at the same place, you know, twice a week, never mm-hmm. selling them anything and then just getting their services. So I think if you spread it around, that's their business. They have to, they have to do that in order to decide if they would want to buy something anyways. And so I don't feel like I'm taking advantage, because there's plenty of people who are going to sell to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's, once again, I'm loaded with good information here. And hopefully those of you that are listening or thinking about jewelry, knowledge is power. We said that. It's so learning a little bit, doing some research, listening to this show, following the videos. I mean, these are all ways to sort of start building your own knowledge base and repertoire so that you can go out and do this. Because again, if you didn't recognize that it was 14 karat and from, I was listening to you, I'm like, oh, Matt knows this is from Europe. I mean, like, mm-hmm. it's just knowledge is power. So that's the goal of the show is to help people understand that, to talk about things that have sold, how they sold, how you found it. Remember to like, follow, subscribe. Those are all super helpful. Write a review if you like the show. Apple Podcast reviews are really good for us. And remember, you can email us at whatsoldpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, we will be back with two new shows in the next week. Any last words, Matt?
Yeah, just check out. We've got several YouTube channels. Rusty the Reseller is the main one. What Sold, and then the What Sold podcast video version of this podcast. If you like jewelry, we've got an entire playlist on the Rusty channel of jewelry related stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll see you next week, Matt. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.